shit, I break it. Step into my zone, mad rhymes will stifle ya. Lines like rifles go blast when I kick some ass. A lot of rappers be like one-time wonders. Couldn't say a fly rhyme if there was one right under their noses. I hate those motherfucking poses, but I'm so real to them it's scary. And with my unique skills, nah, you can't compare me. And no, we don't make whack tracks. And all the suckers get pushed back when I'm kicking real facts. I represent, set up shit like a tech boy. You're paranoid cause you're a son like Elroy. And you'd be happy as hell to get a record deal. Maybe a soul you'd sell to have mass appeal. I'm greater than all MCs. When I breathe, give me room, please. I be like fascinating when I be updating. Cutting off white kids, pulling their trump cards. I thump hard and make them say that I'm God. Niggas be pretending they're hardcore. Never know the meaning of. But I get props like a slogan, and no man could ever try to diss when I kicks my jam. Lyrically deaf and connecting, complete mic record. No double checking, vocals kill like weapons. But if I have.
Better have my donuts over here with my man Bad News Ramen. I'm trying to play a little bit injured here. I got sick Sunday. Yeah. Are you going with the world's smallest violin over there?
Yeah.
Sunday, Monday was pretty brutal, but been all right the last couple days. I was worried. Monday, I didn't think I'd be here. But I recovered well enough, especially being that I have a week off, which is nice. So, we're here to talk about the wrestling business, and, I'm ready to go. How about you? You all right?
I'm good.
You good?
Yeah. I'm hard.
All right. I had Lil' Kim.
Lil' Kim? With her urban legend?
I guess that wasn't Lil' Kim, was it? It was the Il Nana, my bad.
What was it?
Foxy Brown.
Saying that I'm hard. I was doing the dog pound. Remember? I just want to say peace out to Jerome Kersey real quick. Kind of took me by surprise, but, you know, see how that goes.
Yeah, I was surprised about that. I saw you tweet that out about an hour ago, so, it kind of sucks. Like, I remember Kersey, like, I like those Portland teams, but obviously I wanted the Bulls to win, so, I didn't hate Kersey, but I wasn't cheering for him, but, like, at the end of his career... when he came to the Warriors and they kind of, you know, the Warriors been shit for forever until this year. But, towards the end of his career, he came to the Warriors, he had the bald spot going and stuff, but, like, that dude could still get to the rack and throw it down pretty hard, and he was, like, the enforcer for the Warriors for, like, that last, like, 2-3 years, so, I gained a different, respect for the toughness of one Jerome Kersey, when I actually got to see him play, like every game for a couple of years.
I liked him in Bulls versus Blazers.
Yeah,
he had that tomahawk jam, you know, that the gliding tomahawk.
Well, I was thinking when he was 40 years old playing for the Warriors, he still had the tomahawk, and so that was when I had like a kind of like a different respect for the guy, right? So, I always knew he was a good player, but like you know, you get to see like guys when you see him play like 4 times a year, and like you see, okay, this guy's good or whatever. But then like when you watch him play for like 82 games and. Especially when they're at the end and they're just playing because they still want to play ball and not because, like, you know, they're trying to make money or whatever and, like, still want to try to, like, tack on another title or a guy like Kersey who never got the ring but was still trying to...
He did get the ring. He got it with San Antonio.
Oh, did he get one with San Antonio? Yeah. Nice. Yeah, so that, like, so even more so, right? You know, he's just trying to, like, get as many years in his career as he can and keep playing ball. He was fun to watch at the end of the career, so, yeah.
You did a better job than I could have. I just had Lakers versus or Bulls versus Blazers, you know, and you went deep, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe you're probably a little more disciplined than me in terms of not watching like how bad the Warriors were at that time.
Bad basketball.
Yeah.
Well, I was probably watching. I was watching the Nuggets back when they had Melo and Iverson.
Oh, that probably was when you were in Colorado, huh?
Yeah.
When you were jocking Marcus Camby.
Yeah, hey, Marcus Camby was a good player, dude. He had that Puerto Rican backcourt, you know, with the Terrapins.
Yeah.
So, Padilla and Bonifica.
Oh, Bonifica. Yeah, that sounds more Puerto Rican, man.
So, we are a week away from Fastlane.
Not even a week.
Yes, a couple days. Yeah. And then we're a month away from
WrestleMania.
WrestleMania.
Where I just acquired the tickets.
Acquired.
So to speak.
So they're good seats?
Yeah, they're good seats.
Really good seats?
Yeah, yeah. So I went on and I checked the seat locator. So it's a section, 130, like I think 131 maybe, something like that. And so it's like I thought it was. It's the lower bowl, and then we're 13th row, and then seats 13, 14, 15, 16.
So you know the seat I'm taking, right?
Well, I don't know. You want 13?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, 15.
15?
Yeah, I got it, dude. I'll tell Xavier.
You're sure, right?
I'll tell Xavier.
Why, is Xavier number 14 too?
No, well, at one point, he's never been married to a number. But yeah, so, that's the seats we got. And then, so it's the lower bowl. So it's kind of, I think, better because, you know, the time we went to the arena, you know, as much as I liked it, you know, me as a guy about 5'5" on the floor, people start standing up, people hold up a sign, you can't see shit. But we're in the first actual bowl of seating where it starts to elevate. So I think our seating is going to be really good, and we're also facing towards the entrance ramp. So
do I have to give you a boost?
No. Oh, okay. You just got to give me the money. We're all good.
All right. I'll give you your money. Man, I need one of those halls, dude. What the heck? You coming through with the halls.
I got you right here.
Hey. Give me one of those halls right there. I feel like Nas and Dr. Dre in that one song.
Mixing up this chocolate.
Yeah, chocolate. So, where do you want to go? Do you want to go New Japan? Do you want to go?
Let's go New Japan. I'm ready to go New Japan. Okay. I've been ready for a while, so I'm glad that XSTV started carrying some of it, and I'm glad you've been able to check some of it out. So let me know what you think. What do you like? Who you like out of the guys they've been showing? Also the background for you then.
Okay.
So I think the last month when XSTV's been broadcasting, it's mostly been the rise of Okada. So it's kind of the part where Okada, you know, he was on excursion with NXT over here. Really underutilized him. I know you didn't get to see any of that. I was watching it. I didn't know how good he was or wasn't. I knew they could have used him better just to at least see what he had. He was just kind of like this straight-up sidekick to Samoa Joe in TNA. And then when he returned to Japan, he pretty much ascended right to the top, started beating Tanahashi, which was, the number one guy in Japan. And it's pretty much that part of his return to Japan when he started rising and becoming the NXT champion, the NWJP champion.
IWGP.
IWGP, sorry.
Yeah.
NJPW.
You're setting this up for
pro wrestling. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
NJPW wrestling IWGP champion. And so, yeah, so that's it. It's the part where he had lost the title to Tanahashi and come back. So that's the matches they've been showing ever since then. How you been liking him? Who are the guys that you like in New Japan that you're seeing from there?
So, a couple things. So, the Bullet Club. I like the guys in there. So, not only do you have Haku-san in there, there's that big guy, Fala, or whatever his name is.
Bad Luck Fale.
So, I want to like the guy, but he hasn't really impressed me that much. You know, because they had an 8-man tag with him. I mean, but he has a nice look, but... I mean, you know, I'm going to talk about Carl Anderson, dude. Really? So I think it. I find
because he's an alleged member of the
Anderson. Yeah, well, I just find it funny that there's still some legs to the Anderson name.
Yeah,
and the whole thing is the guy actually I don't want to sound too much like Ole over here, but you know, his in ring he looks like an Anderson. You know, just look kind of with the way he moves and stuff. I think he's legit. I really enjoyed watching him.
Can I say this? Ask it in this way. You don't want to blow his horn too much, but
toot toot. Nah, he's not there yet, but definite good heel work. That team's it's a nice heel team. Devitt, I watched Okada, and I've Okada to me is really a throwback. You know, like not the biggest, you know, not the greatest physique, you know, well built, you know, kind of. It's funny how like they had the match with Prince Devitt, and they're trying to say like, oh, you know, like Okada's a heavyweight, and it's like, yeah, by what, like 10 pounds? I mean, he's not that much bigger. But I mean, Okada's legit. I mean, very, very, you know, very good in the ring. Tells a good story. The Devitt match, I thought it was good. It wasn't as good as last week's when he was fighting what's his name?
Okada Tanahashi or
I didn't see Maccabi. Yeah.
Maccabi, that was a sick match.
I didn't see Tanahashi. I wanted to see that one. I thought the Maccabi match was really good. Devitt one, it was good. I mean, the end was good. The couple things I don't like about Devitt, his physique, I think, is more akin to probably late 80s, early 90s. You know, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's like the physique that you're used to. I think like now, especially, Devitt's a good worker, you know, but I think the sad thing is like, I think like his physique, to me at least, takes away from what he does. Like, I guess I'm just used to like indie guys just kind of being, you know, like athletic and stuff and don't have that killer physique. But it'll help him, you know, it'll definitely help him in the WWE.
You seeing the guy's too ripped?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. Yeah, but I mean, that's like ticky-tack. You know, he was trying to do some chops. I don't think his chops weren't all that great. But, I mean, his stomps were great. I mean, I'm not trying to take away from the guy. I'm not trying to say I didn't like the match. I liked the match. It wasn't as good as Maccabi. What I really liked about that match was, you know, Okada was the fan favorite, even though he's trying to play a heel. And then at the end, what I liked was that he went straight back to a heel, and people don't want to boo him, but you know they kind of booed because they had to, but people still like him. And I like kind of like, you know, there's some, I feel like there's like seeds of animosity between him and Guido, and so that's interesting to kind of figure out. What I really liked about the week before with Maccabi was that it set up into the next match. Like, I knew I was going to see Devitt the next week. This week I don't know who I'm going to see, and I really wanted to see Devitt versus Guido. And they showed that 8-man tag.
Yeah.
And the 8-man tag, it was okay.
It was so quick. Yeah. I mean, they showed the time of the matches in there, which is pretty cool. It was like a 15, 20-minute match, but they only showed like 5 minutes of it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, but overall, it's like there's nothing to complain about. It's like I'm watching two really good performers in the ring. Okada had some nice spots. I thought he had better spots with Maccabi. I thought Devitt came off really well. It overall, it's like, you know, you had some kickouts and stuff, and it's just kind of funny the different ideology in terms of Japanese wrestling, American wrestling. Like, Devitt puts a tombstone on Okada, and it's like, yeah, that should be a pin, right? And he kicks out, and Okada kicks out of a couple things, but it's just a
short arm clothesline to get finished.
Yeah, well, not so much that, because you know he set up the, you know, yeah, passes, yeah, Okada set up with the tombstone, yeah, exactly. So he did a spot. But it's more kind of like the whole kind of fighting spirit Japanese style, you know, where like they really appreciate guys kicking out. Like, guys kicking out over there means a lot more than, say, like a Cena kicking out at everything at two, you know. So it's just like, you know what's going to happen. Here it's a little bit of drama. I mean, I knew Okada was going to beat Devitt. I just want to know how he beat him. But I thought it came across really well. And, you know, to tell you the truth, it's like I was out of town, so I missed Raw. And then the first wrestling show that I watch is New Japan over Raw, so that's saying a lot. And it's nice to kind of go back, and it kind of opens the door to like probably watch an NXT more so over Raw, you know, because I already know what I'm going to get from Raw. But it's at least there's an outlet now, even though it's like 2-3 years old. You know, like in the past, I can figure out what happened, you know, if I wanted to, but I'm not. I'm suspending my belief in following the program. And It's just, I don't know, it's like, there's like a realness to it. Like, you know, like when I first started watching WCW, or, you know, at the time it was NWA, there was like still like, it was really kayfabe, you know, and not so much kayfabe in terms of like really bad storylines, but like, you know, like, oh, and the guy's saying like, oh, I should have beat him and stuff and everything, and I tried my best, but I didn't do it. You know, there's that sense of realism that I appreciated.
You could buy into.
Yeah. Not so much buy into, but it's like, you know, it's like, I know it's fake, but I know these guys are doing everything they can to make it seem real, and they're trying to bring competitiveness back into it. And that's what I kind of enjoy, just like this little tinge of realism where everything with it, I enjoy the WWE product, but you know, everything is so fake, and you know, even the storylines are fake.
It's overproduced,
yeah,
overwritten.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And this is just kind of like down home, and the crowds were really good. The crowds aren't trying to make a name for themselves on Twitter and stuff. It's just, it's old style wrestling that I grew up liking, and I'm glad I have an avenue to watch that again.
Yeah, no, I've been really enjoying it ever since it came on, and on those nights when I don't watch, if I don't watch SmackDown on Thursday these days, when it comes down to the choice of what am I going to watch on Friday, SmackDown or New Japan, I'm watching New Japan first every time. Yeah, so that's definitely the way I was feeling. Also, I kind of think it was kind of interesting too, because then I'm watching that and seeing Finn Balor, Prince Devitt 2 years ago, and then now I've been watching him a lot on NXT. So it's kind of cool to see how he's changed and kind of what his new character is. So have you been able to see any?
Well, what is his new character, Finn Balor?
Well, so he's Finn Balor. I mean, essentially he's the same guy. I guess that'd be hard for me to say. I've seen him wrestle a few times, but really the first time I've seen him do a real promo was what I saw in New Japan there. He's playing more of that arrogant heel character in Japan, which he's more of a baby face in NXT right now, and it's like him and Hideo Itami, which is Kenta. Those guys have mostly been kind of like having an alliance. He comes with I like the look he's got now. And he was doing this in the, there was a few months between when he left New Japan, when he was independent before he came, and he was doing a lot of like body paint, like Venom and Carnage. So he's got this kind of body paint gimmick that is similar to Carnage, but just different enough that they're not going to get sued over it. And so it's a pretty decent look. He doesn't do it every time, but so I kind of like that when he does paint up, it's got a little bit of impact. But his matches are really good in NXT, and he won a tournament, so he's the number one contender. Owens is the guy that's really impressing me in NXT, so as we transition, I would like to talk about that. But I was more curious, have you watched any of the Finn Balor stuff, any NXT at all?
I haven't. I mean, I haven't had time to do it, but I mean, I definitely know. The good thing about NXT is that you know they have a hot product, and you know they have, like, hot wrestlers and, like, hot characters, even though, and these names you hear about, but you, like, with me, I never really seen them wrestle. Like, I seen, like, Steam, I think I saw, like, some highlights of Steam versus El Generico, whatever his name is now.
Zane,
and they were, like, friends and stuff, and Steam turns on him and stuff. So, I know there's, like, three or four guys over there that I can start watching right away. It's just a case of me actually kind of just starting to do it.
Yeah, I'm gonna suggest you probably do that, and then you're probably going to want to go back about a month or two. Steam's really impressive right now. Kevin Owens, he won the NXT title last week, and the storyline.
Speaking of winning titles, I think it's time for you to finally, like, you know, because you alluded to it last week, saying that you're in the championship hunt for your Frost Off. Not even Frost Off. Your what do they call it?
It's eighth grade. It's middle school. So
yeah. So
the eighth grade team. Yeah.
So you won the title. You got a big old trophy.
Yeah, the trophy was decent sized. Yeah. Yeah, we won. Completed a 15-0 season, and was able to beat the team that knocked us out of the playoffs the year before. They beat us by about 15. We got them by 15 this year, and it was a good, nice run.
So how does it feel, man? I mean, because me and you as players have won championships, but as a coach, I've never been there. I've been close, but how does it feel to finally win a tournament as a coach? What's going through your head right now?
What are you
feeling?
Well,
what's in your heart?
Yeah. So this is Cheryl Miller on me over there?
No. If I was Cheryl Miller, I'd be like,
that was a question.
If I go Cheryl Miller, I'm like so. You went 15-0, won the championship.
And then hand the mic over to me. Yeah.
No, I mean, so seriously, though, like, you know, like, we both faced success. I think you've won two state championships for your club team as a soccer player. I've won one. And I remember how it felt as a player. But what's the difference in terms of winning it as a player and then winning it as a coach?
I don't think that there's any difference in terms of winning it as a player and from winning it as a coach. I think the biggest difference was, like, winning it as a kid than winning it as an adult, trying to, like, get your kids where you want them to go. So, like, you know, when we were kids, like, we knew we were good, and I don't know, we're just kind of happy to be there, I think. I mean, you know, we obviously would have been pretty disappointed if we didn't win, but I don't know, at least the way we were, we all knew we were really good.
But and you knew that there was no way that I was going to let anybody score on my defense, so.
I mean, I know you would have gone through me if you had to.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I think we knew, like, from the beginning that, like, that was what we were cast to do. And then, but the thing was, like, our team, by the time we won that, we were together, like, a couple, 3 years, right? So the thing with this team was, like, I had 2 years, right? I had last year was the first time I ever met him. And then we did really well. And then I had him for this year, which is their eighth grade year. And then, like, I know everybody's gone next year. And we never had, like, ultimately we came to that point where the team split, but it was never, like, a point where we were like, oh, shit, this is going to be it, right? So they kind of had that, like, that wall against them that, you know, we're going to, like, they were even talking about it as soon as we won. They're like, dude, I can't believe this is the last time we're ever going to play together as a team. And that was the kind of the thing, like, the sense of urgency. And the thing with our school is, like, we're not an athletic power at all. And every few years, they kind of bubble up, and they'll have a decent team. And then it's kind of like, okay, like, especially because, like, you know, me being the second year over there, I'm cool with all the guys that are PE. They've been there, like, 10 years, and they've all done their coaching, and they don't coach anymore. They just kind of, you know, they teach and they go home. But they're all like, yeah, we all won our titles, dude. So, you know, you can't talk shit to us until you bring yours home. And the way I'm looking at it is, like, I'm happy to coach this team, whether they're good or bad, for however long I'm there. But I would like to cash in a title. And I'm realistically looking at it like, dude, when's the next time I'm going to get a group of guys together like
this? A good core group.
Not just that they're good, like, players, but all good kids, dude. I mean, really. Like, there's not, like, one single kid out of 16 we have on that team that, like, we disliked or was a problem. And whether, you know, I had a rotation that was like 9, maybe 10 deep. So there was like minimum 5, 6 guys that were just sitting on the bench, never playing like half the season, never caused a problem, always worked hard in practice, just like, you know, always like supported each other outside, never had to worry about these guys for grades, stuff like that. So it was just a really good group, and they pulled for each other like crazy.
So what'd you tell them for the championship game? I mean, what was the speech that you gave them before, and what was the speech after?
I didn't say anything to them after because we were just celebrating. I didn't have any pregame speech. Like, I had a couple of ideas what I might have wanted to say, but then the way that the thing all worked out was like, so, you know, it's middle school. There's a seventh grade championship right before us, and then we have the eighth grade championship. And then the game before us was, like, really good, right? The last, like, 3-4 minutes, game was a 2-point game every way, and the kids are just going back and forth, like, and I'm watching my guys, dude, and they were just into the game, dude. Like, they weren't nervous at all. They're jumping up and down, cheering for these kids, seventh graders they never met, didn't know who the hell they were. And then I was just watching them, like, dude, these guys are so relaxed, like, they're ready to go. And so, like, anything that I was thinking about, like, trying to, like, amp them up before the game, they didn't need it. And then so we had a really good shoot around in the warm-up, and I even heard the guys on the other team saying, oh, dude, those guys can shoot, right? So I could tell, like, they were already intimidated. So we just, you know, I just told them it was our time, and we just go out. And it's like, our thing was, like, the thing that I had told them the day before was, as far as we had gone the season before, there was nothing, there was nothing that we could do in the regular season that was going to mean anything or impress anybody. We had to make the playoffs, and then once we got into, like, the semifinals, anything we did there, like, actually started to matter. But before that, it was like, if we beat a team by 40, it didn't mean anything, because, like, that we were supposed to do. So we kind of spent the season, we won every game we played, but we kind of played up and down to competition. You know, we won every game by 6 points, 10 points, 20 points against a really bad team. But, like, it wasn't like there was any statement games where we went against a really good team and we just blew the doors off them. We just did enough to win. But then when we played in the tournament coming out of Christmas break, like, those are all really good teams. We all beat them solid. And it was just kind of like, okay, you know, when we need to kind of turn it on, we could. And once we got to that point where we got to the playoffs, we won all three of the playoff games, like, pretty comfortably. So I felt all good. It was good.
I have to make an addendum to what I stated about how I never won it as a coach. I forgot. I did win District 2 as a coach with my sister's team, and it was kind of the same way. And soccer's a little bit different from basketball, at least a little bit in terms of tournament, because me and you come from the same school. Like, you got to that first game, you got to kill that team. You got to kill that first team. You got to win like 8-0, 8-1, because everybody looks at that scoreboard and like, oh, this team is the team to beat. And it was funny, like, when they won district cups, it was kind of the same thing. Like, I was with that team for probably about 2-3 years, and everybody was doing exactly what I wanted to do. I was the assistant coach, but you know how that goes. You know, like, you have the head coach that smiled and you know, took photos with parents and stuff, and, you know,
never shook the hand and kissed the babies.
Pretty much. And then I'm the one that did all the dirty work and actually taught them how to play. And I remember my most favorite memory of that was when they won the tournament. Like, I ran a very tight ship. Like, if they were fooling around before the game, whatever, I was like, I'm like, hey, no, no, no. I'm like, you guys got to start getting locked in. I said, you know, we play my way and that's it. And we play hard and we don't make mistakes and stuff. But then when they won the tournament, they started doing all the girly stuff, you know, like,
taking a bunch of selfies. Did the selfie stick come out?
No.
Is there a Filipino girl on the team?
No. This was back in the 90s.
Okay.
This is way,
so, Lessons team?
Okay, yeah, my sister's team. My sister's
team. I thought we were talking about the girls.
But after they won, it was fun just to watch them celebrate. And I didn't have to worry about the next game. I didn't have to worry about them, like, being I didn't have to be strict with them. I didn't have to, you know, about discipline. I was just like, go ahead. You know, it's like, you guys want to do whatever you want to do.
Do it if you want to do that, right?
You know, and the parents, you know, at the same time, like, I'm watching them, like, celebrate and stuff, and on the inside, I'm steaming, dude. I'm like, man, you guys better stop doing that stuff. But one of the parents came over and stuff, and she congratulated me and stuff. I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, it's not, I didn't do anything. It's like, they did it. And I just kind of pointed at the girls. I was like, well, look at them. You know, like, I would never allow them to do that. You know, I said, but they've earned it, so they can do whatever they want to do. So it's funny. They're remember this and enjoy it, dude.
Yeah. Well, my boys, they comported themselves well. I'd say if I'm gonna go Arn Anderson and go two
here. Carl Anderson.
So no, Arn here. So I won it at like the two levels when we were youths. And then I coached the Xavier's baseball team to a championship in Little League. So that one was really fun because there was a playoff there. And then this at school. But also, you know, my intramural team had a four-year or four-season championship streak, too, in basketball. So I've won at every level at this point. So I'm trying to keep that going.
I remember you tried to get me to play 1 year.
I wanted you to come down. We didn't have no big.
I know. But you still won, dude. So
yeah. Well, we recruited.
I would mess up the chemistry, dude.
Nah, come on, dude. Every time you and Kaveh had the chemistry, dude. You guys like met each other for 3 minutes, and you guys were already like throwing no looks, dude.
Well, my favorite thing was we're playing a pickup game, and you told someone because I was.
Oh, I was going against each other.
I was running wild against your team, dude. I was like dominating that game. And you knew me from way back when, and I started playing, you know, in community college and stuff and everything, and I developed my game to a lot more than what you thought it was. And my favorite thing you said was, like, you told the guy, like, just get in front of him. If you get in front of him, you know, he can't go around you. And I looked at you, I'm like, oh, really? Get in front of me? And I torched you for, like, I scored, like, the last 5 points of the game.
Not on me.
Not on you. Never me. Yeah, but after the game, I looked at you, I was like, yeah. I'm like, things change, motherfucker. Yeah.
That was when you developed the bank shot, the pull-up bank shot.
Hey, man, don't front, dude.
It went in.
I was running point, dude. I was doing everything, dude.
Yep.
Grabbing the rebound, starting the fast break. And you're like, oh, just get in front of him. I reeled off like five or six more points. The thing I do like about me and you when we won state championships, so there was a lot of like unsung heroes on that team. And you got to kind of admit I was one of the unsung heroes. You know, like there's other players on that team that were really good and got all the limelight and stuff, but there was me in the back, and I just shut them down. And I remember they scored two goals against us, and it wasn't my fault, of course. It was because I always had weak side defenders.
Is David Smythe's fault?
Yeah. Right. Well, it was one of those side defenders' fault. I could have used
or Beetle Brith.
Yeah, I could have used you. Yeah, those guys were weak. I could have used you back there because you're solid. But I remember
they needed me on offense. What can I say?
So we're up like 3-2, and I remember I said they're not scoring again. I said there's no way that these guys are going to score, and I started fouling people left and right. And there's actually like a really good ref. Like I pretty much like did like a side drop kick to a guy at his shin guards and stuff, and she blew the whistle. She's like, you can't do that. And I was like, all right, I respect that, right? And then, so we're up 3-2. It's still like up in the air. And then my man over here, from nowhere, dude, he was playing forward. And he was like
from the moon to Pluto, yeah. Back
so,
down to Earth.
So I was
not forward. I was right mid.
Right mid. Well, anyways,
it was a long run, yeah. Man.
So he was the smallest guy on the team. They weren't really paying attention because he was pretty small. This guy takes it from the right side, comes all the way in the middle, dude. Scores the clinching goal 4-2. And then I think we might have scored one more goal, but I knew, I mean, it was so much relief. When you scored that goal,
it was game over.
It was so much relief for me, and I even went up to you. I was like, man, we got this, dude. I'm like, I knew you were going to score that, dude. And it was great. And then after, you know, we're all done and stuff, and we're all banged up and stuff, and we had some tough matches, especially like the semifinal was probably the hardest game. It was against Sebastopol. And that's where our boy Vince, like, took a shot from the midfield line. It was just like this, like he was so far back. I was standing right next to him, and he just jogs and stuff. All of a sudden he turns around, does this monster shot, and it goes in. We're like, where the hell did that come from? We won 1-0. But I remember like after the final, it just felt good, man. I walked off the field like I had nothing else to prove, man. And like I didn't need anybody to tell me, give me any accolades or anything like that, because I knew I handled my business, dude. And then to watch you handle your business at the same time, and pretty much you eased a lot of tension off of me, because I was just like,
well, make sure you didn't let one more in.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Which was tough because they were dangerous.
Yeah,
you know, but just you when you scored that goal, you took out anything that they had. You sapped all the strength out of them. And then after that, it was open season for me. It's like, all right, it's time for me to start hunting. And I start knocking fools down, and I just start playing hard. And, you know, that the parents on the other sideline are yelling at me and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, we got this in the bag, dude. You know, I'm already in their head, so.
It's funny that you bring up that team, because there became a certain part in our season where, because I had a kid that was 6'3", and really good athlete, and dude gets pretty much hacked in his arm every time he goes to the basket. But these referees, they don't want to call anything, because I think they're trying to even the game out or whatever. So I actually told him because my assistant coach was telling him how, hey, I'm not telling anybody to flop, but if you get fouled, you got to sell it, right? So I told him the Beetle Breath story about how we couldn't get a single call against the Okra in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And our coach told him, hey, next time anybody gets hit, you just go down as hard as you can. And this guy, Brett, was like one of the bigger guys, like not height-wise, but in stature. One of the bigger, stronger guys we had on our team. And this guy on the other team, like, just barely, like, brushed by him. And dude just went straight to his back and yelled, ah, ref, he got me.
He got me, ref.
And we were just laughing our asses off.
Here's the worst thing about that whole thing, right? They called a foul on him. He got me, ref.
So, yeah, I was able to tell that story and relay that to my guys. And then in practice, every once in a while, they'd throw it at me, too. So it was a good group of guys. And I'm glad we came home with the trophy and putting up a couple banners this year.
Good.
So I'll always have those to point to.
Coach Kevin Baldspot.
Yeah, well, just put my name up there.
Yeah. I'll put my name up there. I'd steal the banner, you know, hold it hostage and stuff.
I do have the keys to the gym. So there you go. I can sneak in there with the ladder one night and yeah. Kind of spray paint.
Are you and the assistant coach in cahoots? So let's go ahead and talk about the quote-unquote take-home show of Raw. Wasn't too bad. It wasn't too great, but it was decent.
I actually thought it was a pretty good show overall. Especially like the better parts of the show I thought were pretty good. I thought I mean, I thought Ziggler and Rollins was excellent.
That was a great match.
I thought that as much as I don't like any of these matches involving Kane and the Big Show, I thought they actually, the element of having Daniel Bryan and Reigns at the ringside, I thought it did the job for both matches. And I thought that Bryan and Reigns did an excellent job of trying to sell that Raw and sell the pay-per-view. So, like, them even not necessarily being in the matches, them on the side, kind of Reigns signing his autographs and Daniel Bryan trying to be a distraction. I thought they built up towards the pay-per-view pretty darn well. So I thought it was a really good show for them. I thought, and I want to ask you about this when we get into it, but...
Let's get into it now.
Okay, Sandow, man. Like, do you like the direction that that's heading in? I think what they are actually building to, and I don't want to get too crazy, I think they're building to giving Sandow a WrestleMania moment. But then I would be concerned what happens afterwards. So what do you think about Sandow at this point?
Well, you kind of stole all the thunder from me, dude. You know, because when we were talking about it, a couple weeks ago, you're like, I don't know how this is going to extend out. I like it. I mean, because what you said was, because I told you, I was like, oh, I like the way this is going with the Miz kind of firing him and having him be his personal assistant, this, that, and this. You're like, well, I don't know how they can extend it. But the Miz is doing a good job of extending it. You know, like just saying like, oh, hey, you know, like my shoes are untied or something. You know, whatever he was doing, like he stopped the match twice and stuff, and Sandow lost. I thought it was good. I mean, it's still kind of comic fair, but at the same time, like, the Miz is able to kind of add new wrinkles into it and stuff. So I think it is being extended. I'm just along for the ride with that. You know, I really don't have, you kind of have to see what it is. I mean, it's like, yeah, Sandow is with the Miz, and the Miz is, he's not a big player. You know what I mean? It's like the storyline is there. It's not like Sandow's going to take off, because once Miz is gone, then where is he going to go? I'm just glad that he's entertaining again without trying to be entertaining or trying to be like the comic spoof for everything. So I really liked it. Even like what they did with Barrett and Ambrose at the end, you know, so it was a nice dynamic. I mean, it's not anything great, but it's entertaining. And that's what I've been liking about Raw, is that they're entertaining. I thought
even before we move on, I'll let you go real quick, but even the fact that they led into that whole story with the Ambrose versus your man, I'm blanking.
Luke Harper,
yeah, like they give you a really good wrestling match that actually leads into like what the story is going to be later on.
See, I didn't think it was that good of a match. I mean, I felt it was slow. It was a slow match, and both. I thought Ambrose at the end came across really well, but to me, Luke Harper the whole match was like a step slow. He's just really slow and methodical, and I know he could go a lot better than that.
Yeah, it's not a 5-star match or anything, but as far as Raw goes, that's a match that I can sit there and watch and enjoy, and doesn't make me say, "Oh, why am I watching this?" Right? If that's the worst match I'm going to see out of Eric Rowan or out of Luke Harper, then so be it. Right? And then Dean Ambrose did his part, but they took a match that was based around wrestling and then they turned it into a storyline, and I think that's a good thing, and especially the way Raw has been booked for the majority of the last few years, like where nothing's really going on with the mid card. That's a good way to like take a mid-card feud that's not even really a feud, but a mid-card match, and turn it into something. And I thought they did an effective job, and I thought they needed to, because, you know, Wade Barrett's a really good worker. He's a good performer. He's a good champion. They're doing nothing with him. So, you know, good. Let's make this Fastlane a good card, because, you know, you're trying to debut a new pay-per-view. You're trying to attach this free extra month of the network, so... And then you're not going to really feature Cena as a main event. So, you know, put some good card together, like top to bottom good card. And I think they're doing it.
The one thing that they are doing is, when Cena wasn't the champion or whatever it was, he would have his time, you know, like his slots on the show. And but when wrestling was good, and I think it's good now, I think they found a really good formula with Cena. There's enough going on without Cena where it makes it really good. I mean, every segment that they had in Raw was good. I mean, even you know, the Ric Flair Triple H wasn't that good.
I want to ask you about that later too.
But I mean, so the Ascension versus what's his name?
The return of the primetime players.
And, you know, so, I mean, even that, you know, it's like just like little sparks here and there. You know, I'm kind of watching, and I wasn't, you know, and Bray didn't perform. And see, in the past, if Bray didn't perform, then it's like, oh, well, you know, I really didn't like this. I really don't like this Raw because my favorite wrestler now didn't perform on the card. He still had a spot. It wasn't a huge, like, 10-minute spot where he's just talking nonsense, and you're like, well, why are you talking for the Bellas and Paige? I'm watching that. And then, of course, what's really working is the Usos and Tyson Kidd and Cesaro.
Yeah.
I mean, I like everything. I like everything about that series. And the thing with it is that you have Natalya for like the past 2 weeks really supporting the team, and there's no dissension whatsoever. And then, you know, they lose in the intergender one, and now there's dissension again. So it's nice storytelling here and there. It's really developed storytelling. And then of course Dusty Rhodes kind of coming back, like what we kind of alluded to was going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, that's there too. So even though I don't like the Stardust Goldust angle that's going on, I mean, I can get behind it. And if they ever, the
story's going,
yeah. And if they do, you know, and, you know, if they do the match for WrestleMania, I mean, we're going to be there, and I'm going to enjoy watching it. And you know, I hope they say it the way that I hope they do it the way that I want them to, where in the end, like they hug it out and stuff, and Dusty's there, and then the three Rhodes are all there, and people can cheer them and stuff because they deserve to be cheered. I mean, if this is Goldust's swan song, he deserves to be cheered. And I think Stardust for Cody, for whatever all he's done with all the character changes that he's done, totally buying into this character, which is really a dumb character.
Yeah.
But he's selling it as all hell.
Like, the song is awesome, dude.
Yeah. I mean, I'm respecting what he's doing to develop that character. I have questions about what's going to happen after WrestleMania with that character, but and he's going all into it, and I can respect what he's doing, and I can respect, you know, Dusty being there and stuff, and you know, Dusty's losing so much weight, and I'm kind of worried about that guy, but you know,
that should be a good thing, dude.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it can go either two ways, but yeah, I mean, every segment for the most part. Except for Rusev and Cena, which I really didn't care about, and then.
But at least they didn't like overdo it with them.
Yeah,
and that would be the thing, because yeah, when you said every segment was good earlier, I wanted to give you that look that I give you every once in a while, where it makes you pause.
So the Chuck D look.
Yeah,
we're just going to the beach.
Yeah, so I wouldn't go and.
You know what happened last time, man. Yeah.
I wouldn't go ahead and say that the segments were good segments per se, but they weren't long enough that that. They hindered the show. So you kind of mentioned you thought that Triple H and Ric Flair was a bad segment then. So I was kind of curious what you were going to say. This I wanted to ask you about, because I'm not going to sit here and say it was a good segment. Any segment where you let Triple H kind of spew on for 10 minutes about like how great he is a segment that I'm happy to miss. But for Ric Flair's part, I'll say like, he didn't come in and play this comedy role where he's like Ric Flair turned up to 500 times. You know, he played a serious role and had like an actually serious, legitimate message. I don't buy the message because I've seen Sting wrestle in the last few years and I know he sucks. But I felt like Ric Flair did the job. And while that's not like what we kind of grew up expecting to see out of Ric Flair, I think kind of at this age, like we've gotten, I know you more so than me because, you know, you've been such a big Ric Flair fan over the years. Like, you've gotten sick of him going like way over the top as being this crazy, like just insane character every time he comes back. And I thought this was more a reserved but realistic type of person for him to be.
Well, it's funny that you say that he does a job, because he does a job for everybody. He's still doing jobs for everybody. You know, he's had three segments, and the one when it was Evolution versus the Shield, and he kind of said that Evolution was a real deal and stuff, and he kind of gave the wink at the end. I mean, he did the job there. He did the job when the three Hall of Famers came out.
Let me cut you off here real quick, and then I'll... Sometimes when he comes in to just say things like that, it's extremely forced. Like when he comes in to say, John Cena, you know, you're the greatest of all time. I know there's no way he fucking buys that stuff. But go ahead, sorry.
Well, no, it's extremely forced. You know, I mean, everything that he's doing, and that's what I'm saying, is that he's still doing the job, because guys like Hulk Hogan or Shawn Michaels won't do the job. Shawn Michaels used to do the job before when he was playing the role of the GM. But there's no way that Hulk Hogan would do the job for anybody. I mean, Flair's the one that's still getting hit. You know, he got, I think when, I forget who it was that came in and pretty much decimated Flair. It was, I forget who it was when he had the three Hall of Famers talking about Survivor Series. Or, yeah, was it Survivor Series? Yeah, it was Survivor Series. It was some guy came in and floored him and stuff. It was probably like Big Show or something. It was Big Show, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then Triple H pushes Ric Flair, which is a big thing. I mean, you know, you see Ric Flair on the floor and Triple H over him, and that's still a big deal. The message really wasn't there. I mean, I think the best thing out of that whole thing was Triple H said, like, the only thing I saw was that you carried Sting, which is true. So it was kind of nice to hear that.
I'll let you go again. It kind of overshadows at the end where Triple H says, like, you know, basically implies he's better than Ric Flair.
Yeah.
So then, you know, you kind of lose credibility with the previous statement.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of fast-forwarding in it because I really didn't want to hear it. I mean, so it wasn't like I was, like, sitting on every word that Ric Flair said because I've heard it before, same way with you. And it's just, you know, it's more kind of a thing. I think it's more ego pandering towards Triple H, you know, to put Triple H in a storyline that really nobody cares about. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think anybody, when Sting was going to WWE, I don't think anybody had on the top of the list saying, oh, I want to see Triple H versus Sting. You know, I think they wanted, you know, Sting versus anybody besides Triple H. And maybe,
for some reason, they still want to see Sting and Undertaker.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, that's besides the point. I think just Triple H is kind of the Brooklyn Brawler. You know, like, he's the guy that new guys come and face, you know, to see, you know, to kind of work through a match and show them how what the WWE style is. It's the style that we want. I really don't care about Sting, you know, so that's why I don't think the segment really worked, because it's just, I really don't care about that match.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't care about Sting or the match. The question was more, how did you feel Flair came off? Because I know some of the last couple of times when you've seen Flair come on, you haven't, like, you kind of wished you hadn't seen him. Or you didn't really like the way that he came off. So I'm more asking you, like, how you felt that Flair came off in that segment.
Well, I already know what Flair's role is. I mean, if you really look at it, Flair is there to give legitimacy to any storyline that doesn't deserve to be legitimate. If you're going to put him in, I mean, I wouldn't say, like, with Evolution, not so much, just because Evolution reformed. And
well, at least he was part of Evolution.
Yeah, yeah.
So it made sense.
And then, you know, you have the three panel thing, you know, with the three Hall of Famers and stuff, and that was a storyline that nobody really cared about. And this one is just a case where, you know, it's like, I really resign myself to the fact that, I mean, what can Ric Flair do? I mean, Ric Flair, he can't fight anymore. So he's just going to be a guy on the mic. He slurs his words a lot, you know, and just, you know, it's kind of sad to see him how he is, but at the same time, it's like, this guy for the past 25 years has entertained me. I mean, he has carte blanche from my standpoint. He can do whatever the hell he wants to do. His legacy will never be tarnished with me. I don't get upset. I'm just glad to see the guy
still working
on TV and knowing that he's getting paid, because, you know, he has financial problems, this, that, and this. You know, and it's not like, it's a case like, you know, like, they'd bring back some old guys, like, you know, classic Freddie Blassie. You know, and just, like, way back when, it's just like, dude, I'm like, who cares about this guy? Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least, like, Flair can say stuff. He can back it up because he's done all this stuff. And he's kind of like a poor man's Bret Hart right now. You know, like, when they bring Bret Hart out, you know, Hart always comes across as $1 million. Hart never looks bad, because Hart will never be the foil for anybody. He won't do the job, like, by looking weak in that sense. And more power to him. But I know Flair loves the business so much that he'll do whatever job they ask him to do. And, you know, he has so much history that he doesn't come across. I don't think his legacy will ever be tarnished. And that's just pretty much where I am with that. I really don't have a problem with what he did. The problem that I do have is, like, he has to talk to Triple H. And you know, I fast-forward a big part of that segment, because it is more of the same.
Well, every Triple H promo is the same. But I just feel like, you know, for the sake of the show, I'm going to watch it so I can actually, like, critically evaluate, like, the dumb stuff he says sometimes. And yeah, coming through with the whole thing at the end, like, you know, that you know, Ric Flair is not Triple H and this and that. It's like, nah, I agree. Like, I liked how he basically put it out there that Ric Flair made Sting. But then in the end, it kind of comes full circle, and like Triple H drops like, essentially, I'm better than you, Ric Flair, and yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah,
it's always self-serving for Triple H.
Well, I mean, the whole thing down the line too is that, you know, Ric Flair will probably be in the Hall of Fame again. You know, he'll probably be like, they'll probably induct Evolution. You know, and Ric Flair will be like a 3-time like guy in the Hall. So I really don't care. I mean, the guy's in the Hall of Fame twice. Even though the Hall of Fame doesn't really lose anything.
As long as I mean, up in somebody,
yeah,
busting somebody's ears.
Yeah.
I really don't give a damn.
Yeah. So, Ziggler and Seth Rollins. What'd you think? I mean, what'd you think of that match when you saw like the last like 10 seconds of that match?
Yeah, that was crazy. I rewinded it several times. Just like the way that it went from like a super kick to a avoided curb stomp to a super kick to a. To the zigzag, and the way that they worked it together, that went from Ziggler's super kick to, like, you know, and there's the overused term of no wasted motion, but just like perfectly kicked, and the way he turned right into where Ziggler needed to hit him for that, I thought it was perfect. And for me, it was kind of like, you know, a lot of times you kind of feel this empty feeling when there's a run in and DQ. But I had no empty feeling. I felt like that there's no doubt that Ziggler won that match. And so...
I thought the running was well played. I mean, you know, because I'm sitting there, he hits a zigzag, and it's like, oh, like, he's going to win this match. And then the guy, they run in, and I'm sitting there going, like... Because I'm sitting there, I mean, it's kind of like the thing, like, that we talk about with Ziggler. Like, and we've actually talked about it a lot, because before he got fired, he was winning all the matches. And you didn't know who was going to win, and when he would win, you're sitting there going, like, wow. And so he does this stuff with, like, Seth Rollins, and he hits a zigzag, and he pins him, and you actually think he's going to win. And the payoff is there, and then they break the count up, and the payoff is still there. Because you're sitting there going, like, Ziggler is at the point now where, like, he can beat Seth Rollins, where before...
Straight up.
Yeah, straight up, yeah. And then there's interference and stuff. And even when Ziggler came out, you know, and the program started, I'm like, well, maybe this is a program. I'm like, okay, finally, like, Seth Rollins has a program for Fastlane. Ziggler's the perfect guy for it. Either way, it's like the payoff is going to be good. You know, like, even if Ziggler, I don't know if they're going to fight each other in Fastlane, but even if there's interference in Fastlane and Ziggler loses because of interference, the payoff is still there, because it's like they're finally pumping this guy up and going against a legitimate guy.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, that broken up three count, I thought it was great. I mean, it came out of nowhere. It surprised me, and I didn't throw the keys down or nothing like that.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go so far as to say that I thought the interference at the end was great, but I thought that the match was so good, and the way that the near finish was so good, that it didn't leave me dissatisfied. Right? Sometimes like the way the running comes, like, you just feel like, dude, what the hell was that? Like, well, what's the point, right? But this one was played so well that even though Ziggler went off a DQ, I was completely satisfied and happy with the result of the match. And I think it's kind of going back to what I was talking about for a while, and I think you've been coming around my way a little bit, like Ill Out Scratch, and saying that...
talking about the ladies?
Yeah, the ladies. Just saying, like you get to the point in wrestling now where if you can just appreciate the match, whether who wins or loses, then you're satisfied. And that's really, there's like a class of wrestlers in there that's where I'm with now. And like a Ziggler versus a Rollins match, I'm going to watch it every single time. I'm not going to be I might be dissatisfied with who wins, just because, you know, I think it's a really even matchup. But, you know, I know when it's all done, the match was going to be really good.
So why do you think it's this way of this now? I mean, because the whole thing was, you know, a year ago, I was saying, like, you know what, like, I don't care if it's a good match, I don't care what it is, it's like, I'm tired of seeing my guys, like, just lose all the time and whatever, and I'm not appreciating the matches. Now it's like, to me, it's like it's a complete 180. It's like, now I'm saying, like, I don't care who wins as long as it's a good match. Why do you think there's a change in that now? I mean, what's with the programming that does that?
I have no idea, because I came around to this, like, a little bit sooner than you did. So I think that'd be more of a question that I should be asking you. Like, why? What happened that made you come around?
But I mean, have you seen a difference in the programming for someone like me to kind of come around and do that?
No, I the only thing I could come up with is, well, for me, is like I think I came to a point where if I really if all I cared about was the results, then there was no point for me to watch wrestling anymore. So I kind of started, I think I kind of appreciated, like, I mean, I think we've been appreciating the art and the skill that's involved in it, but I think it came more to the art side of it. It's like, okay, you know, who's doing what they're supposed to do? Who's making these matches look really good? Like, who's cutting a really good promo? And whether those guys end up getting over or not, like, at least I know who is good, and that can put me through enough. At least if I'm going to come on here on this podcast and try to say who I like and who should be getting a push, I feel I should be a little bit educated in saying, well, this guy's doing this in the ring, this guy's doing that on the mic, and this is why I think this guy should get a little bit more of a consideration than this other guy that's getting a push and really isn't doing anything, right? And then if I want to come on here and rail on Ryback for, you know, a year or a year and a half of him, like, not impressing me at all, you know, if all of a sudden I start seeing this guy starts making some strides, I want to be nuanced enough to say, hey, I think Ryback's getting a little bit better, right? And so I think I just started watching it more as a show that I'm going to critique and enjoy the good stuff and keep an open mind to what actually is good as much as I can. And I think that helps me watch the show because, yeah, it's not going to be results-based the way that the show goes. That's how I kind of reconciled with it. I don't know. You might have a different reason how you came around to that point.
I don't know how I came around to that point. I mean, I think, you know, and we're doing this podcast, and the guy that we have on my computer desk is Macho Man, and then like a Macho Man Papa Vinyl, and I always kind of come back to it as like the cream rises to the top, and it finally, like, it's taken a long time, but the good performers are rising to the top, not in terms of like winning titles this, that, and this, but
they're
not even getting over. I mean, because you can still say like Dolph Ziggler hasn't gotten over. I mean, for us, he's gotten over. But the thing is, like, these matches that they're putting on, they're not making, like, let's take Dolph Ziggler. I think Dolph Ziggler is, like, the perfect example of why I started kind of coming around to what's going on.
The guy I told you about, like, 3 years ago.
The guy you did tell me about. Yeah, the guy that you discovered, yeah. But when he was getting buried, he was just losing for no reason. Sandow was losing for no reason. Like, really good workers. Barrett was losing for no reason. They weren't protecting guys. They would have them lose to, like, guys that shouldn't be beating them. And even like
Sin Cara.
Yeah, like, so the Sin Cara versus Wade Barrett. I mean, even when Sin Cara beat Wade Barrett, I was fine with it. I think the reason why I was fine with it is because they didn't have those dumbass lights that, like, they have in the
trampoline.
Yeah. But the whole thing is, like, if they lose or whatever it is, like, when Barrett loses Sin Cara, it extends the storyline into something else. Now, Sin Cara and Wade Barrett never materialized. But Barrett is still a force, and he's still respected in terms of, at least in the company, where he's not looking bad. Ziggler, when he was losing all the time, they weren't protecting him. He was just losing just to lose, and he was putting on a great match, and then he would just lose to, like, guys he shouldn't be losing to. They started having Ziggler win. They put him in a legitimate program with Luke Harper, where Harper beats him, and then Ziggler beats him on the next pay-per-view. Both those guys come across looking like $1 million, and that's, like, the main thing with me is, like, make the guys look good. Even if they lose, if they lose, have a story for it, or have it lose legitimately where you can sit there and go, okay, Ziggler put on a great match, but Harper put on a great match too. Harper, I could see Harper deserving to win, where before Ziggler would, like, lose to, like, say, like, Del Rio, like, 20 times, or he'd lose to, like, you know, whoever, every time he'd just go against a guy that was higher in stature. But in terms of work rate, wasn't there. Like, you know, you could say, like, you know, Randy Orton for a time, or Big Show for a time, or whatever it was. Now, he's winning some, he's losing some, but it's not a case where now people are starting to, like, realize, like, this guy pretty much is still in the, like he says, he's pretty much still in the show the whole time, and now they're protecting that.
I'm gonna make an analogy here, dude. I think this is going to work perfectly. My son, Logan, I finally gotten to see my way and start getting into comics a little bit more, right? And, you know, he's pretty analytical, so not only does he read the comics, but then, like, he goes on all these, like, YouTube sites and websites, and he's looking up all these, like, what-if battles and this and that, right? So 50 times a day I get, hey, Dad, who's going to win, this guy or that guy, right? All fucking day, right? So, like, I think a perfect example would be, like, okay, he starts asking me, because I'm teaching him about Moon Knight, and now he starts getting into Moon Knight. So then he finally comes to me, Dad, who wins, Moon Knight or Batman, right? And, like, in my mind, like, I want Moon Knight to kick fucking Batman's ass, right? But I know, realistically, Batman's gonna beat Moon Knight, right? I know this, right?
What?
So I reckon...
He has Frenchie.
He does.
Go ahead.
So, like, I try to think about it, so, you know, the best way possible. And like, maybe 70-80% of the time, Batman's gonna win, Moon Knight's gonna lose. 20% of the time, Moon Knight gets a full moon, he might beat Batman's ass. And like,
are they starting to do the phases of the moon now again with Moon Knight?
That's always been his enhancement, right? His powers are enhanced.
So that they brought him back to the Fist of Khonshu crap, right?
Khonshu, yeah. He's always
well, there was a while where that wasn't the case, but go ahead.
Yeah. So at any rate, like, and I can reconcile that with, like, okay, like, I know that these guys fight enough times, like, you know, Batman's gonna win his 70%, Moon Knight's gonna win his 30%. And then when you go through all these kind of, like, you know, this universe versus that universe, like, I got to this point because I got the question 50 times a day. Like, I can't just, like, outright every time say, oh, well, you know, Deadpool's going to beat, what's the equivalent on DC?
Lobo?
Nah, the Slade.
Okay. Well, it used to be Deadpool and Lobo, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, whatever. Okay, Lobo Wolverine, right? He said, who's going to win? Lobo Wolverine.
He actually asked that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't say, like, well, Wolverine's going to win or Lobo's going to win. I can say Wolverine's going to win 65% of the time, and that's a legitimate answer. And that's what I think I want to see out of wrestling, right? It's like, you know, fine. If you feel that Wade Barrett is a superior opponent to Dolph Ziggler, I don't have any problem with that. But don't tell me that Wade Barrett needs to beat him 8 times in a row, and then Dolph Ziggler's kind of in purgatory and has no place to go. And I think that they've done a little bit better job. And I think kind of what you're saying, I never agreed with the point of Sin Cara beating Wade Barrett. But at the very least, they brought Wade Barrett back, and he kicked his ass the next week. And I think that makes it at least seem okay. It makes the whole product look better. And then, you know, you still are able to keep, you know, the certain guys you want to move forward strong.
I think the other thing that's really helped, too, is as much as we bag on Big Show and Kane, I think having them there as being, like, these guys that aren't supposed to lose and this, that, and this, I think there's a common thread. There's, like, a common enemy out of these guys, and you can bring in Ryback and Rowan as well, where you have this kind of, like, thing going on with these guys. But I think even though I don't like the Authority, I think them being there and them being the thing that everybody hates and everybody wants to see them, like lose, I think that really helps the storyline along as well. There's that look,
yeah,
again.
Making that face there. I don't agree with that, but go ahead.
But I'm just saying, like, I think there could be a better heel faction. I think you can have a better heel faction without the Authority, but
I think it can be the Authority. It just can't be Big Show and Kane in every important match twice a week. That's what the problem is.
But the difference is, like, for the pay-per-views, though, they're usually not involved. You know, and if it's a team pay-per-view, they are. But at least they're not, like, headlining, or, like, they're, like, the second to last for the main event. And that's my only thing. It's like, because who's going to be fighting? Big Show and Kane don't have a program in Fastlane. They're extending the storyline for Daniel Bryan and
those guys might, the way it's looking these days, they might be going against each other at Fastlane.
Well, whatever. And that's a match that I'm not going to watch. But what I'm saying is, like, you have, like, this common heel group thread, and then you have all these mid-carders that have their own feuds as well. So every feud that's going on right now actually, like, means something. Everything that's going on in TV actually means something. And I don't think you really have that as much without at least having, like, two guys that are, because before it'd be these two guys, right? And they weren't part of any storyline. They're just fighting, you know, they're just fighting the Big Show because Big Show's a giant, you know, and how are they going to do against a giant, you know, and Kane's like,
that's what Roman Reigns has been doing for 2 months.
But what, yeah, but who is he fighting though? Who's
Big Show every time.
But who is he fighting in Fastlane?
Fighting Daniel Bryan.
Okay, so, I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. It's like, it's, You still have this faction of people, but you have they're the secondary storyline, but there's still obstacles in the way to get to that storyline, and then the actual storyline is going to be the payoff for the pay per view. If it was a case where if I was going to say, like, okay, so this Fastlane's coming in, it's going to be Daniel Bryan versus Kane, and then Roman Reigns versus the Big Show, And then if they win those two, then they can fight each other for the next pay-per-view to get the number one contender. I have a problem with that. But with the way that it is right now, these guys, instead of like being these mythical characters that nobody can beat, now they're extending storylines that they're kind of like, they're not mechanics. I wouldn't say they're mechanics because they're not good enough in the ring to be a mechanic, but they're the guys that, you know, are the testing ground for the actual payoff match.
I think that they worked this week. And the reason why those matches worked weren't as much even because of the match that was going on as much as the guy that was outside the ring, like, adding another element to it. But for me, like, 2 months of, like, the same bad match time after time leading into, like, one good Raw to set up Fastlane does not get it done for me when there's plenty of other guys on the roster that you could make, I think, a lot more interesting programming, well, show in and show out.
We even differ with that because for Fastlane, I don't even care about the main event. I don't care about Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns. I care about all the other matches that are going on. So that's the whole thing. It's like,
I care.
Well, good for you. I mean, I don't. I mean, it's not a storyline that I really care about. I didn't like it when it came out. But the whole thing is it's watchable for me. And I know Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan is going to be a good match, but I'm not looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to all the other matches that are there. And that's really where I'm going off of. Like, I've never been interested with the WWE product for what the main event's going to be. I haven't been interested in the main event for the past year. I've been more interested in the mid card, and that's what I'm watching.
I think that's a, I don't know. I don't think you should dismiss the main event because it's the main event.
Like, I don't dismiss. I'm not dismissing the main event because it's the main event.
Well, you're saying, like,
I'm dismissing the main event because it's a storyline I don't care about.
Why don't you care about that main event?
Why don't I care about the main event? Because I don't think the story's good. I don't care about that storyline. You know, I don't care about who's going to face Brock Lesnar for the title. I've never been a main event guy, dude. I've never enjoyed the main event unless you have like a Ric Flair involved or a Macho Man involved. Guys, if Dolph Ziggler was in the main event with Seth Rollins and that was your main event, I'd be all for it. It's just right now, like, Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, they're not guys that I really care about in terms of really watching right now. I mean, it's there. It's better than having a John Cena match as the main event.
Yeah, but see, I don't think, I mean, if you're going to go...
You're asking me why I like the product?
No,
and I'm telling you why I like the product.
I understand. This is what I'm saying, right? You know, if we're not trying to say we're going all, you know, new Hall of Fame inductee Fatu over here making a difference, okay? But if we're going to come here and say, like, I don't care about a main event because you're putting John Cena and like, you know, some retread guy I don't care about to see, and then WWE is going to finally turn around and give you, like, kind of a new pay-per-view where they're taking two guys that are traditionally not... You know, one guy, traditionally Daniel Bryan's not a guy they're going to use as a main eventer, and Roman Reigns is a new guy that they're going to try to give a shot. You know, this is kind of what we're asking for, right? This is what we're kind of looking for. So I'm kind of...
Am I saying that the WWE product sucks right now?
No, what I'm saying that...
Well, I mean...
What I'm saying is that if they were listening, right, and they're saying, well, over here I give them John Cena and then some other guy, and he says he doesn't care... And then I turn around and give them Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, and they still don't care. Why don't I just keep going with John Cena because I know I'm going to make a bunch of money from these other kids, right? I'm not questioning what you like and what you don't like. It is what it is. But, like, I'm just kind of surprised that's your kind of outlook on it because, like, for one time, they're kind of going in the direction of giving the fans that they want to see, and like you still don't even care.
Well, if they were really listening, then they would have never started that program in the first place. It would have been Roman Reigns with the title shot, and to respect the Royal Rumble, and have Roman Reigns have the title shot, and not have him have to give up that title shot and fight for it. And if they're really listening, then they would still have CM Punk, and he'd be the champion right now. All I'm saying is that if I was to, I know what you're saying, but if I was to come at you and say, like, oh, I don't care about this main event and the WWE sucks and I want to blah, 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 I would totally understand where you're coming at right now. All I'm saying is that I don't care about the main event. I've never really cared about main events. I care about what's in the mid card, and I think WWE has been very enjoyable to watch, and it has nothing to do with Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. You know, it has nothing to do with that. Is the match going to be good on Fastlane? Yeah, the match is going to be good. And is it going to be a good match? Is it going to be a match that I'm interested? Yeah. But the whole thing is that I am more interested in all the characters, all the mid-card, and then at the end, I know I'm going to watch a good match, but that's not the reason why I'm not... That's not the main reason why I want to watch Fastlane.
You're willing... Okay, let me see if I can retranslate this. You're interested in watching Fastlane because you think top to bottom is going to be a good card, but you're not going to watch that pay-per-view exclusively for the main event? Is that what you're...
Yeah.
Okay.
And the reason why I bring up Big Show and Kane and stuff, too, I like when everything works. I like when everybody has a legitimate... legitimate is the wrong word, but all the pieces are working together to create a better universe. All the pieces are being used to create better storylines. All the pieces are there to create better Raws and everything like that, because I've never been a pay-per-view guy. You know, I've never pined to watch a pay-per-view. It's like, what are the shows that I watch wrestling for, right? It's the lead-up to a pay-per-view, and it's the day after the pay-per-view. Those are the main reasons why. The day after the pay-per-view is my favorite time to watch wrestling. It's never the pay-per-view, because the pay-per-views for me have always fallen short. There's some that, you know, WrestleMania for the most part always delivers. Survivor Series, not Survivor, but Royal Rumble for me delivers. SummerSlam delivers as well. Those are the three main pay-per-views that I look forward to. But when you had all these WCW pay-per-views and stuff, like I never sat there like, I have to watch this pay-per-view. Yeah. I've never been that type of wrestling fan, because I don't want to spend money when I can watch it for free. Yeah. You know, if I can pay cash to go to, you know, I went on vacation. I had $600, right? I paid everything cash. I didn't even bat an eye spending $600 like that. You know, if I can get it, because for me, cash is all free. It's stuff I just do with bartending. It's not even my money. It's just like free money. So if I can pay something for free, you know, I'd rather do that.
Straight cash, homie.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather do that. So the reason why I bring up the Big Show and Kane is like, they're working within the universe of creating better programming. And I have a, you know, you give me that.
I looked down when I made the look, dude. It was a reaction to what you said. I was not even making eye contact when I made the look, dude. There was nothing.
I'm not saying those are the main two guys that are making everything work.
They're making the show better. And
no, they're not. No.
That's what
you said. Them playing the roles that they are, along with every other performer on that roster, to make a better product. That's what's working for me now. That's what works for me now, is that all these guys are working together to make a better product. Now, if it was a case where it was Big Show by himself or Kane by themselves, and they're winning just because they're supposed to win, and they're beating guys like Dolph Ziggler, beating guys like Daniel Bryan, then that'd be one thing. But these two guys are doing the jobs for everybody, and it's the twilight of their careers. They're doing jobs for people. I mean, who else would you rather see in there? Like a Luke Harper? You know, of course I'd like to see Luke Harper instead of the Big Show, but he hasn't reached that level yet.
I wouldn't necessarily like to see Luke Harper rather than Big Show. We're getting late in the show. My personal opinion.
Well, because you keep on giving those flipping looks.
I looked down. Do you realize how hard I bit my lip that last minute and a half you were talking? You're not even listening on the inside over here.
You're not even listening to what I'm saying.
No, I'm listening to what you're saying.
Because you're taking it and saying, like, Big Show and Kane, the only reason why the program is working. I'm not trying to say that. I'm saying them as a collective, they add to the collective of making the program good.
And I hear what you're saying, and I respectfully disagree. And what I'm saying is that having the cast of characters they have in the authority is played out and boring. Now, I'm fine with you having, like, a powerhouse to make that faction legitimate, but having Kane and the Big Show together in that faction is boring and redundant, and it just, all it does is it forces them to put on minimum of two bad matches every time they have a show.
So Daniel Bryan versus Big Show was a bad match.
What I'm saying is Daniel Bryan versus Big Show was good, mostly because you had Roman Reigns adding an element to the side. What I'm saying is the week before and the two times the week before I saw it, it was a boring match. And I'm going to say the exact same thing for Roman Reigns with these matches he's had with Kane. On Raw, it worked because of the way Daniel Bryan made the thing work. But the last three times I'd seen it in the previous week and a half, I thought the matches were boring. And my whole thing that I've been saying since day one is, you want to build to a good match between Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, then go ahead and do that. But you're trying to build these guys up to a pay-per-view that they're going to main event, and you're putting them with a match that just is not working with Big Show and Kane.
So how would you do that then? Because you can't have these two guys face each other before a pay-per-view. Who else would you put in that spot?
I think they're underutilizing Wade Barrett as one.
So you'd rather have like Wade Barrett lose like Daniel Bryan? Or Wade Barrett lose to Roman Reigns? You'd rather see that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would.
And then what happens to the whole Intercontinental title picture?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily... Okay, well, I mean, okay, there's another angle of it. You know, I'm not thinking of it in terms of, like, who's in the storyline right now. Okay, I'm thinking...
But that's where I'm coming from. That's the whole thing that I'm coming from, is that every individual that has airtime right now is working towards a better overall product. And who else are you going to put in Kane's and Big Show's place?
Well, okay. You've gone so far down this road that at this point... Yeah, no, like I said, okay, you had...
I haven't gone down any road. I'm just saying...
No,
You're the one giving me these dirty looks all the time whenever I say something.
Okay, well, okay.
Okay, okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right, let's see if we can...
Hey, Dad.
Let's see if we can figure this out. Okay, if you're just saying that it all worked on Raw in particular, then I'll agree. Okay, but if you're going to tell me that it's been working for the last 2 months...
No, I'll agree with you. When I see, like, Big Show versus Daniel Bryan versus in SmackDown, I don't care.
For the fourth time in a row.
No, I don't care. You know, but at the same time, what I'm saying is that you cannot put any other two guys in Kane's or Big Show's spot to extend that storyline. Who else are you going to put in there?
Are you saying right now because they've come so far down that road? Or if you're saying we go back to where they, like, put... Where they added Big Show into a faction that Kane already existed.
That was a different time.
Because what I'm saying is when you had Kane as the muscle, which I didn't really care for, and you needed to add another guy into the faction, you add Wade Barrett would have made it a very interesting faction. Okay, but they went and added Big Show, which pretty much did what Kane
but right now, as we speak right now, Cesaro isn't a great program, because the problem that you have is that you had these guys that were good workers, they weren't doing anything. Right now, Cesaro's in a good program with the tag team belts. Wade Barrett's in a good program with Ambrose, which I think is working great. I think even if Ambrose doesn't win the Intercontinental Champion belt, I think that's a great program. I'm just saying, if you put these guys in and they're in there right now, you don't have these two undercard matches, and we'd be sitting there saying, like, oh, Fastlane sucks. You know, Fastlane's going to suck. But every match that's on that card has a legitimate storyline, and that's the one thing that we're always saying. And that's the only thing I'm trying to bring out in terms of saying that Kane and Big Show, having these two guys at least extend storylines to a bigger storyline, I think that works. But at the same time, I understand at the same time what you're saying. Like, the past 3 weeks, it's like, it's either Kane versus Roman Reigns, Kane versus Daniel Bryan, Big Show versus Roman Reigns. But at the same time, like, I don't want to see Wade Barrett lose, I'm supposed to be excited about an Intercontinental Championship, and I've seen this guy get beat for the past 4 weeks. The whole thing is that Kane and Big Show can lose for 4 weeks, and they won't look bad. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying, everybody, you know, what I like to see Cesaro as part of the Authority. What I'd like to see in the beginning, Cesaro and the Authority. Would I like to see Wade Barrett in the beginning of the Authority? Of course I would. But I just don't think the storytelling element of that would have extended. I think someone would get hurt in that. I don't think Kane and Big Show get hurt as much as Wade Barrett or Cesaro would if they're losing to these guys every week.
Luke Harper.
I think Luke Harper, and I said that in the beginning, but he's not ready yet. Luke Harper's not ready yet.
Luke Harper and Kane, as that two guys in that faction would have made it much more.
Luke Harper, Kane, and Eric Rowan in the Authority, I think it's $1 million. I think Ryback in the Authority would have been great too.
Ryback, I think actually, the way, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but the way Ryback's been going the last couple months, I think it potentially could have worked.
There's always guys that are better there. I'm just saying that every guy in that universe is working towards a better product, and that's what's really changed my thinking. And so, you know, because look at this last year with the Road to WrestleMania, we hated it. I mean, we couldn't stand it. We were like, we didn't want to talk. We were like talking about reset buttons. We haven't brought up the reset button once.
Yeah.
Because every guy's working towards a better product, and I don't like Kane matches. I don't like. I mean, I can get by with the Big Show matches. I don't like Kane matches, you know. But at least they're developing storylines, and it allows other guys. And the only difference is that now all the mid-carders are developing storylines as well.
All right. I'll give this one to you, and
I'll just give me that look one more time.
No, yeah. I'll walk away with this piece, and this is going to be what wins it for you. They brought Titus back with what's his name to give a shot
Darren
for the primetime. Yes, for the primetime players, and that's a pretty good example of taking two guys that are going nowhere and giving them something to do, and like almost exactly a calendar year from when they split them for no reason. If they're feeling like they're dwindling on their tag teams, to bring those two guys that aren't going anywhere and make them a foil and see. I'm actually interested to see now what's going to happen with them and the Ascension going forward. I fear that they're going to just job to them, but I'm actually curious to see, will they have a legitimate kind of feud going with Ascension?
But if they job to them, there's always the prospect of them
turning on each other?
No, not turning on each other, but them getting better, and then kind of having the same path as like Kid and Cesaro, because Kid and Cesaro was just thrown together.
But
and
those guys were such good workers. It was
I think Darren Young and Titus are good workers as well. So there's opportunities there for them to kind of shine and maybe continue on as a tag team and get, you know, because they had a ton of fan support, you know, before they broke up. So so we always do Golden Mike. I'm thinking this time we're going to do the Rusted Mike. So, because I've kind of been doing bad promos here and there, so this time around we're gonna, you know, this is a Rusted Mic segment with a really bad promo.
Okay.
Come on in if you would, Don Morocco, Mr. Fuji, gentlemen. On Friday night, out at the Nassau Coliseum, it is going to be the tandem of Ricky Steamboat and the Junkyard Dog, Mr. Fuji. So,
Steamboat-san, you be softing, right? You be making a fool of yourself on TV, right? On the hand of Magnificent One. And yours truly, Mr. Fuji-san. So now, to save the embarrassing, or save face, you're doing Junkyard Dog inside. How sweet it is, boy, sir. You will pay more.
All right, Don Morocco, certainly you can add to the comments of Mr. Fuji.
We have a steamboat. See, what we have here is a steamboat who's looking for a friend. So what does the steamboat do? He goes out and finds a dog. Isn't this a wonderful little story for all you little boys and girls? Wonderful, wonderful, just wonderful. So when the steamboat finds the dog, dog's sniffing all over the place, going all over the grounds, all over the place, and you know he's been there because he's messy and you step all over him. You have a steamboat and a dog. And you have Mr. Fuji and Magnificent Morocco, you see. And we don't leave things all over, do we?
Yeah, 64.
64. Yeah. Don't get cute with me now.
No, I'm not.
Don't get cute with me. Because it's all numbers. It's all time. Time and numbers and space. 64, maybe 65, or maybe 46 in somebody else's eyes. And we're going to be in your face.
Thank you, gentlemen. I can't thank you enough. Don Morocco and Mr. Fuji.
You're giving that look again, dude. It's usually reserved for me, but you get it to Don the Rock.
I don't know if that's a tin mic or a copper mic, whatever it rusted from.
Duel of the Iron Mic?
Just not quality enough to be considered iron. That was bad. Whoever
hey, wrote... Don't get cute with me.
Whoever wrote really bad promos for John Cena and The Ultimate Warrior, like, combined together to come up with that thing. That was a tragedy.
It's all about time and space.
The time and space, like, that was, like, some, like, yeah, really bad Ultimate Warrior stuff, and then...
So here's the sad thing, like, I like Don the Rock Morocco.
I like him, I like Fuji.
Fuji was legit in that one, but...
A little too much with the sans, but okay. I mean, he wasn't...
Okay, okay.
He wasn't an abomination.
Yeah.
But Morocco, he went Doug Baldwin in the end zone on that one.
Yeah. That's the first. I kept on seeing like the worst promo of all time or whatever. I've never actually listened to it, so I'm doing this cold turkey as well. But that was pretty bad.
That was pretty bad.
And the whole thing is that
makes Jumpin' Jeff Farmer seem like a genius.
You turn the tables on me. You turn them in a bad way.
I got you.
But the thing is, I mean, Morocco was a decent promo guy. I think this was just a case where I don't think there was a scriptwriter for this one. I think there's like, okay, it's time to do a promo, and it was.
He's still not there.
I think Don probably had a good promo in mind, and he just fell flat with it. Kind of like our podcast, you know. We were like, oh, hey, yeah.
Hey, we're talking about champions.
Yeah, champions. So we're on that. So we'll leave that one as it is. Let it lie.
All right.
Okay. And it's funny, like, so we have Hall of Kayfabe, and either one of these two guys we can put in.
I thought we put
we put in Don the Rock, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Fuji's there. Do you have another guy that, because last week you were talking about the East and the West. Remember? Did you already forget the guy that was going to be the West guy?
No, I remember who it was, but then I got to thinking you may have inducted the guy already, so I can throw him out there.
Okay.
And if you've already inducted him, then we could go on to the next. Did we induct LaParca?
Yes, we did. We did induct LaParca. Kinda,
yeah.
How's that guy the West? He's way, way down south.
Western Hemisphere.
Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
So LaParca, we've already inducted LaParca.
LaParca's in. All right, cool, good. All right, well, to go on your theme that you attempted to go last week, since we're almost out of February here, I'm going to bring up a name, and you have full authority to reject this guy, because I never saw the guy wrestle a whole lot, but heard a ton of fan support of him from promotions that I didn't watch too much. I know you watched a little bit of him. I don't think you're like a huge fan of him, but if you can attest to the man as a worker, then I think he might deserve a spot. And that would be Scorpio.
Oh, Scorpio. Too Cold Scorpio.
Too Cold Scorpio. Flash Funk.
It's funny that we have Scorpio in there, but we don't have Bagwell in there.
Scorpio's okay. I never saw it. I've seen like a handful of matches that the guy was in, and they weren't terrible matches. But then I've heard from a bunch of guys a lot of ECW guys that watched him and really back up what this guy did. So I kind of try to keep an open mind. I've seen a couple of decent high spots the guy's done.
You know, Scorpio. Yeah, I mean he deserves to be in. I mean he was like a step above enhancement talent. I mean, you go down the line of the people that he's faced. I really only saw him in the WWE products of Flash Funk, but I knew he was Too Cold Scorpio. He had really good tag team matches when Bagwell was his partner. He's had great matches with Chris Benoit as well. Legitimate worker. He's kind of under the same vein as like say D'Lo Brown. Two totally different styles, but guys that, you know, could work really well, had enough high spots where they were, you know, where you legitimately thought that they could win.
But were still believable
as power guys, right? Yeah, he's more like a Coco Beware, you know. A bigger
Coco?
Yeah, and to me, that's kind of high praise. I mean Coco was fun to watch. You know, especially when the crowd chanted
"Bird."
No, Coco. but I mean, we could put Scorpio in there. I don't know if we have the stories for Scorpio to put him in there, but
I don't know either. But you know, we're pushing up against an hour and a half, so we can go like pretty close. I've seen some of the decent stuff. I thought like for a guy who had pretty decent like size and build, like he was still. Had a pretty good like agile set. He could go high spot, high flyer type match, or he could go to a power based match. And
he had the best rock bottom. The guy that got delivered the rock bottom because they used to show it on the.
Right, he took it the best.
Yeah, he took one of the best rock bottoms there. So we'll just leave it at that. So Too Cold Scorpio in the Hall of Kayfabe. We'll try to come up with one that's better later on. We got
Fast. Elix Skipper.
Huh? Elix Skipper, dude. I got love for Elix Skipper, man. We didn't put that guy in yet? Okay, so Summer Down Line, don't...
I mean, I know...
No. We'll just end it there because we're at an hour and a half now. Fastlane coming up this Sunday.
Come over?
I don't think so.
You got to work?
I don't got to work, but I've been... Why don't you come over here?
I'm pshawing you right now.
Why don't you come over here?
Could be.
Okay, yeah, you come over here.
Watch over here?
Watch over here, yeah. All right. So let me see if the time frame works out where you can actually come over here and watch it. But yeah, we'll check you guys out next week. I got my boy over here. Better have my donuts. I am one bad news ramen. My boy's not trying to talk over here because we did a great segment on Flash Funk, but then just got interrupted with all these coughs and stuff and everything. I don't want you to start hacking again, dude.
I got two words for you.
Yeah.
Take press.
Take press.
Shit, I break it. Step into my zone, mad rhymes will stifle ya. Lines like rifles go blast when I kick some ass. A lot of rappers be like one-time wonders. Couldn't say a fly rhyme if there was one right under their noses. I hate those motherfucking posers, but I'm so real to them it's scary. And with my unique skills, nah, you can't compare me. And no, we don't make whack tracks. And all the suckers get pushed back when I'm kicking real facts. I represent, set up shit like a tech boy. You're paranoid cause you're a son like Elroy. And you'd be happy as hell to get a record deal. Maybe a soul you'd sell to have mass appeal. Oh yes, I'm greater than all MCs. When I breathe, give me room, please. I be like fascinating when I be updating. Cutting off white kids, pulling their trump cards. I thump hard and make them say that I'm God. Niggas be pretending they're hardcore. Never know the meaning of it. But I get props like a slogan, and no man could ever try to diss when I kicks my jams. Lyrically deaf and connecting, complete mic record. No double checking, vocals kill like weapons.